With traffic, errands, and parking, cars can be a chore.
But a great car can be an adventure, a getaway, and a prized possession.
Whatever your budget or family require, there's a car out there you'll love. We're here to help you find it. I'm Todd.
I'm Paul. And this is the Everyday Driver Car Debate.
I'm on my way over here, and I'm driving. It's dry out. Unfortunately, not dry enough to get the Lotus out, as I wished.
But it's
kind of warm and dry.
I mean, it is nice.
My driveway is still a disaster, by the way, but it's slowly melting off. So I'm working on that
problem. You need, line with boards in,
something
in the tracks of the tires.
Totally. So, there's lots of things that I'm thinking about doing to solve that problem, because the Lotus needs to be driven. But I'm working my way over here in the Phaeton.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I, as I've mentioned before, the steering wheel won't go up anymore. The motor's broken.
Yeah, the adjustment
motor's
broken.
So I can't see the top of the gauge.
Yeah.
And I'm cruising along, and it feels very normal. And I look down as I pass somebody. I look down, I'm doing 95.
You're kidding me.
Like,
that car
hides speed a little bit. I didn't really mean to be doing nearly a daily triple. Just commuting over here. It was no big deal.
Wow.
That thing is a train. I'm working on a very cool piece that is the Comparo piece. You and I each did our individual piece of those sedans.
Yep.
We've put them against two new sedans on television. Now I'm making a piece for YouTube exclusively that is just you and I talking about those sedans in comparison to each other.
Yeah.
And what's interesting is the way the pieces come together really organically, you spend more time talking about the Phaeton and I spend more time talking about the Maserati.
Well,
it's pretty well balanced.
That particular shoot was the first time you'd ever driven the Maserati.
Yes, absolutely.
I'd driven Phaetons a handful of times, but the first real time that I had a headspace of reviewing the car and driving it for that, comparing it to the Maserati. So I think it was really organic, like you said.
It's
together nice.
It's going to be a very cool piece.
That's very cool. Well, guys, welcome back to the podcast. Happy Friday. Season 6, Episode 6, Winter Sports Cars is coming out tomorrow.
Fun episode.
This is the new MX-5 Miata R. In the snow. And so this is the whole concept is, can you drive your sports car year round? Can you drive your sports car in winter tires? And can it do the same kinds of things as the car we know you should have in the winter, which is an SUV?
Of course.
Just any all-wheel drive, anything.
That's what you're
can it do the
have.
Same kind of things? What are the limitations? Yep. There's no empirical testing here or evidence. We did some of our own tests. We hope you enjoy. Please send us feedback on social media. Hopefully you like that episode. And then a lot of stuff is happening directed towards Amazon Prime here soon, right?
Here's the thing. Half the season has been sent to Amazon Prime, and they are genuinely weeks behind on getting through the content that's been sent to them and getting it up. So I have weeks ago sent half the season over. The next half is waiting. As soon as this half goes live, the next half will launch. I'm doing what I can. Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, the first four episodes of the season are now available on Vimeo. Some of you are watching it there, and the remaining couple will come very soon. So it's all coming out. I'm sorry about the fact that it isn't as fast as I hoped, but it is kind of out of our hands at this point a little bit. Thank you guys for responding, and really appreciate all of you that are watching on the Motor Trend cable channel, because that Nielsen number does matter to us.
Mm-hmm.
And if you DVR
does.
it still counts, and we appreciate all of that.
All right, so as you all know, the GR Yaris from Toyota has been announced. It's not yet available worldwide.
Yes.
And then there's some announcement and some rumors going on of a GR Corolla. And then as of this recording, Toyota just made the announcement about the revisions to their Supra. So they announced it at their Daytona race facility there, and they announced the 2-liter. It's the 255 horsepower four-cylinder with twice as much torque as an 86.
This was my question, because I was very curious, and they put it on their own information. I was very curious of how it compared, because let's be honest, we're talking about a car that theoretically would step directly on the 86.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Another 2-liter sports car in the Toyota lineup, rear wheel drive, front engine. What are you doing? But I expect this will be, they haven't said yet to my knowledge about prices.
I don't think they've made that announcement.
I expect since the inline six is 50 to 55, I expect this will be 40 to 45, maybe 45 to 50. So it is at least 10 grand above where the 86 lives. What I think is interesting is they're talking about this car weighing about 3,200 pounds, which puts it about 400, 450 pounds heavier than the 86.
Mm-hmm.
But it has twice the torque.
I mean, the reason is they've given it the turbo. The 86 doesn't have the turbo.
Yes.
So
twice as
turbos
much
give you
torque.
Yes. For sure.
So 295 pound-feet of torque is what they're saying We are hoping to drive that soon and have this entire discussion. But we do have a piece coming up soon to talk about the sibling rivalry between the Supra and the 86. So that's coming as well.
Yeah. So what else did they announce? Well, they just actually kind of admitted to the power that the Supra already makes. And so now the output for the new 3-liter Supra, the 6-cylinder, matches the BMW Z4. Mm-hmm. So 382 horsepower. So everything matches now. But we still think that car makes even more power. We still kind of think they're sandbagging us a little bit, because the car we drove for TV was dynoed by the owner, and he was consistently getting over 400.
Yep.
So,
and he has a race shop. He's dynoed a couple times before.
Yeah, he has. So that's all interesting. And so now the launch edition of the Supra is gone, which means the A91 edition is in its place. They've actually upgraded the infotainment screen. They've done a few other things actually to the car itself. And apparently it's just even better, which we're excited about. It makes, you know, the admitted amount of power now. Yeah. And it comes in two different colors. So this really cool refraction blue, I think it's called. And a black. So more carbon splitter goodness and a lot of goodies. But then they also announced the Supra GT4 available for sale to private teams. This is not like, you know, GT4 other manufacturers that we know offer GT4s.
For sure.
But it's for sale under $200,000, 430 horsepower, and under 3,000 pounds. So this is a genuine competitor. I love this. And it's going to be available August 2020, something like that. And at this particular launch event, they're taking orders. It's not like, hey, it's going to come out. No, they're taking orders now to start building the cars.
What I'm fascinated by, and we just came off a Toyota press launch. We were in Park City here, in our local town. They brought everybody in. It's very bizarre to have a press launch in your own town. So we got to be a part of that. It was very, very cool. We've got videos coming. It was the all-wheel drive Camry, which I know is woohoo, exciting, but we enjoyed ourselves covering that, also covering the new Highlander. We've got videos of both of those coming in the next week or so. There were events around it. It's very snowy here. It's perfect time to do an all-wheel drive something. But we just got done dealing with the Toyota folks and having a great time with them. And what's fascinating is this Gazoo Racing that is a running thread through Toyota right now. It's just they kind of are over in the corner. It's like what AMG did when they finally got absorbed into Mercedes.
Yeah, right.
They're
right
over in the corner going, we can play with that one too. They're looking at everything. It's fascinating.
For sure. Well, there's a question from Benzin217 saying, with Toyota gazooing all over everything, which other brand would we like to see do the same thing, and which models would we like to, you know, have the gazoo-like spec? Well, the 86, but I think this 2-liter Supra announcement means the 86 will never have a turbo from the factory.
Interesting point.
Because if they did, it'll now make this 4-cylinder. It'll now make the same power and torque as the Supra.
Hopefully they'll keep it lightweight, inexpensive, and if it stays naturally aspirated, they'll just solve the torque dip. If the current 86 had no torque dip and, let's say, 200 pound-feet of torque, none of us would complain.
Yeah.
We just wouldn't.
Well, Benzin, to answer your question, the company is Mazda. I'd like to see them start doing their Mazda speed thing again, because Hyundai's come with a bang with the N versions of everything. Now Supra, now Toyota in general as a company, is doing GR and TRD to almost everything.
Yep.
They're bringing the noise.
That's very good.
And meanwhile, Ford has sort of slunk off quietly into the night with SUVs and the Mustang for everyone.
Yep. Or the Mustang SUV, if you'd like, as well.
Ford's doing
that too. But I agree. Mazda has a history in this. Where's the Mazda Speed 3 again? Where's the Mazda Speed 6 and
that's
the Miata?
The company. That is the company. All right, so a bit of other news from Hyundai, who has announced they are partnering with Canoe for an electric vehicle skateboard platform.
Yay.
Canoe.
Is this good news?
Well, Canoe was the offshoot of Faraday Future. The head of design left Faraday along with some other investors. And
everyone else that left.
Everyone,
they didn't all go together, but they all left, yes.
It's a box on wheels. Mm-hmm. It's not a stylish box.
No.
It's ugly. Mm-hmm. And I don't like the name. And so I went digging.
Uh-oh.
And as a matter of fact, Stefan Kraus, the chairman of Canoe, says that they picked that name because it sounds distinctive. And I'm quoting here, it looks cool and creates a feeling of relaxation and movement. He said, for thousands of years, a canoe has been a simple, sustainable transportation device used all over the world. Okay, fair enough.
I'm waiting to see where you're going with this. I don't think it's good. Yeah.
Yeah, a little rant coming on here.
Okay.
Because of internet company names, we're misspelling things, we're dropping consonants. These four companies are actual companies: Nerx, Noom, Zola, and Tackle. Those are actual companies that exist and do business. And we just dropped consonants, we misspelled things, and suddenly we've got an internet company.
By the way, when did consonants become bad?
I don't know.
Actually, no, sorry. It's not consonants. It's vowels.
Well, it's vowels. Yes.
If you would like to have, if we wanted to really be hip, we would drop all the vowels of Everyday Driver.
Well, as a matter of fact,
we'd be Verdi Driver.
I went after and looked at an internet company name generator, and I typed in our name.
Did you really?
And among the gold that it produced,
oh, no.
Some of my favorites include Bupple Everyday Driver,
what?
Unclevery Day Driver, Everyday Driver Biffy, Everyday Driver Gent.
Everyday Driver Gent.
Everyday Driver Belizer.
Even better.
And Everyday Driver Bomaniac.
Oh my gosh.
These are all actual, I mean, we're suddenly cool.
If we just dropped all the vowels, that's actually how we'd be cool.
Well, if Mr. Krause's sort of ethos about the company Canoe means, you know, this is where everything's going, the new electric car company names coming our way include Kayak, Dugout, Dinghy, Sloop, Scow, Roebuck, and Raft, not to mention Skiff, Lifeboat, and Gondola. You know that efficient Chinese sailing ship used by traders throughout Southeast Asia for centuries? Mm. Why not just call your new electric car company Junk?
Yep, exactly. So if you'd go there.
capital J.
I drive a Junk.
It's far catchier and more memorable.
I agree.
Junk.
Nissan had the Juke. Can we just embrace it and go the Nissan Junk? It's the new EV.
Canoe? So your new electric platform will be based on a Canoe.
Awesome.
This Perfect. Is where we've gone, people.
Yeah, it's exciting. Man has left the Canoe only to return. Didn't we move beyond this?
I thought we were past that. I thought we drove cars.
We're going to have an electric car called Horse. We did Horse.
You
horse.
Know that's...
We did Horse. Can Horseless Carriage.
Leave some vowels out.
You just leave the vowel out. You leave the O out or the middle.
Hers.
Horse.
Hers.
Yeah, it's just eight. It's eight. You leave the E because you gotta have some reference, but you take the O out. So it's H-R-S-E.
Hers.
It's a horse. Anyway, or if you really wanted to be cool, you leave a space.
Oh,
it's H underscore. Anyway, the point is here.
Hearse,
we had We had no. Don't do hearse. We had horse, horseless carriage, car, and we'll go back to horse.
Mm-hmm.
And then because we've already got canoe, problem solved.
This is where
problem
we're at
solved.
Now.
Yeah.
Welcome to the future, everybody. We've got a couple of great car debates. First from Kurt, who asks if family cars need to have four doors.
Nope.
Next. This question has never been asked. No, they do not. Moving
All right.
On.
Thanks for listening.
Swipe. Just
Short
kidding.
Podcast.
We've also got Derek D. in Charlotte, North Carolina, who thinks that his next door neighbor is the owner of Spot the Mini. Evan.
That's pretty cool.
That could be. There's only one 2005 Mini with a meatball on the door and hood.
I'm pretty sure.
Right?
And I am pretty sure that still has an Everyday Driver sticker on the back, too.
Awesome.
Just to really bring it home. Yeah.
Well, Derek has taken the advice of his coworkers and now regrets listening to his coworkers about
okay,
car
great.
Choices.
Good, good.
When we're searching for cars for you, local or nationwide, our searches start with Auto Tempest. Instead of searching each car shopping site separately, you can enter all your parameters into Auto Tempest one time and then search them all at once.
With Auto Tempest, you enter your search one time and see local or nationwide results from Cars.com, TrueCar, eBay, and many more. Or you can jump to Craigslist, Auto Trader, or Car Gurus without entering anything new. And they just added a link to Facebook Marketplace too.
Auto Tempest can help you find your next new or used car if there's a dozen in your neighborhood or two in the country. So if you're doing your drive homework, chasing your dream car, or just looking to feed the disease, head to autotempest.com. All the cars, one search.
So let's dive in here to Kurt's car debate. He's writing because his main question is, says, does a family car require four doors?
Mm-hmm.
And he knows that you, Todd, have kids. And he says, maybe it's a better question to ask. Is it reasonable to move the seats every time you need to get into the back seat?
Sure, sure.
All right, yeah. So here's his background. He and his wife plan to have kids in around 2 years. This is important information. Mm-hmm. Okay. She drives a 2017 CRV. He currently has a 2010 base Cayman and a recently acquired 2010 Exige.
Very cool.
You, my friend, have the Everyday Driver sports cars. You've got the two cars.
You own both the cars we own. It's a great point. It's a very, very good point. Yeah.
Unbelievable. He purchased the Exige mainly for track use, and he says the CRV might change into something in the future that can tow, probably the Exige,
yep,
to the track.
For sure. Yep.
But he plans to swap the Cayman for a more family-oriented car, so that he owns one very focused car and another that actually has back seats. The focused car,
okay.
I'm guessing the Exige stays.
Yes, clearly it does.
Why?
He just got
a track car.
He's got that done.
Right?
Yep, for sure.
So He would think, you know, trading the Cayman for a 911 or a Mustang GT or GT350 or maybe an M2, but he's not sure if these are reasonable choices or not.
Okay. All right.
He thinks that he would drive the family car to work most days, so he would like something very enjoyable.
Like it. Okay? It's great. This is good.
He says, I could just as easily drive an M3, a Cadillac ATS-V or Civic Type R, something like that, but those are all four-door cars. Mm-hmm. I mean, the M3's not necessarily. But he says, you know, his wife, who plans to stay at home, already owns a capable family vehicle. So the only time they would take the family car is when his wife is off on another errand, and it would just be he and his future child or children.
Yep. Agreed. Yep.
So the question is he being selfish?
Hmm.
Is the extra space redundancy necessary in this case? Well, I actually, what made a big impression on me early childhood, I mean, I think I was 3. And I still remember my dad had an old, like, Buick two-door coupe. Hmm. And I distinctly remember folding the seat to get in the back. Mm-hmm. I don't think I was in a car seat.
We didn't have car seats. We were allowed to be dangerous and potentially
die. We just rode on the parcel shelf and drank water from the hose. And, exactly. You know, it's just fine.
And there was the mom belt, the arm that comes out.
Yes.
The arm that comes out when she breaks hard. That
I'll
was
use
our,
my
that
arm.
Was our seat belt, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, man. So, yeah, that made a big impression on me. It was white and it was huge. And I went looking at Buick Skylark coupes and they're terrible. But nevertheless, I remember getting, as a young kid, mm-hmm. my dad had a two-door. That mm-hmm. was his car.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
My mom had the four-door Buick, so they were, you know, Buick people.
Mm-hmm.
So I think, first of all, the answer is no. It doesn't have to.
Yeah, agreed.
Now, I went digging for safety rules, and there's not necessarily a federal, I don't think this is a federal mandate, but kids under 13 need to be in the back seat because the NHTSA says the leading cause of death for kids between 1 and 13 is car accidents mm-hmm. and being in the front seat. So, you know, you see it, you can. There's car seats are, you know, we saw that guy who had the Lotus Elise with the car seat in the front.
Yep. I did
There's
it.
No back seat. So
I did it. Yeah,
the only
for sure.
place mm-hmm. you can. So I think, all right, not ideal, certainly, and especially for infants and, you mm-hmm. know, mm-hmm. under 18 months, we'll say. That's, you know, you probably don't want them in the front seat. So could you get by and have to fold the seat? Yeah, it's an inconvenience, but what are the trade-offs? And you mm-hmm, as a parent, mm-hmm. what are you willing to trade off
mm-hmm. you're
between
right. You're right.
your fun and you're looking forward to this? Because the question now is, you've already identified it. How many times will that child be riding in your car if you just take the family car?
Agreed. Yeah.
Why can't you just keep on keeping on?
Yep. Totally.
I mean, you've already got the two, the Cayman for the street, which is very fun, mm-hmm. and then the Exige track car. It sounds like what you want to do is just kind of do the same thing with the next two cars, even though I guess you're keeping the Exige. But, you know yeah. what I mean? You just kind of want that next experience.
The family car and the more fun car for him. And the Exige is the outlier because yeah. it's the full track car. Yeah.
So, yes to the 911, of course. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's no real budget identified in here. But if you're looking at a Cayman, you're probably 25 to 30.
Mm-hmm.
You can pick up a 911 for that. Yes to E92 BMW M3s.
Yeah. Well, the E90 four-door, if you wanted to go that route, but the E92,
sure,
why not?
For sure.
Yeah.
How about a 1998 E36 M3 with 74,000 miles for $25,000?
Oh, there you go. That's good.
Perfect.
That's good. Yeah.
I like the M2. I like the Mustang. But what if you went to a Toyota 86?
Yep. I did it. What? It was great for that. Yeah.
I mean, your son was eight and between 6 and 8 when you had that 86, right?
No, he was more like 3 and 4. When we first got it, he was like
when you
four,
first
four,
got
like four when we first got it. Yeah.
And you took him in the back a lot, right?
Took him all the time.
Yeah.
The big thing was right about the time I sold it, he was almost big enough to start riding in the front seat. I'll jump in a second. Keep going.
No, I mean, I'm just looking at this as the evolution of the garage. You're asking mm-hmm. the same thing, but it ultimately comes down to your willingness to do that. The latch system is in the back of coupes. It's there.
It's in the front of two doors.
Absolutely.
You can put it in a Miata. Yeah.
You could. I mean, they have to consider that.
Mm-hmm.
So while I'm not saying go get a Miata for your infant child.
We're not saying that. That's true.
Here's the other thing is, 2 years from now, you said your wife and you are looking for kids for 2 years from now.
Mm-hmm.
It's 2 years away.
Well, that means you're almost 3 years away from needing to transport said child.
So
yeah.
Why not just continue what you've got? Or if you just want a new experience, you want to get rid of the Cayman,
mm-hmm.
upgrade to the next Cayman, more power. I'm always about more power, but mm-hmm. how about a new experience entirely? That frees up your choices like crazy.
Agreed, yeah.
And then let's say it doesn't have a back seat and you keep it and you just, you know, your situation probably will change. Mm-hmm. It may change. It probably will change by then. Mm-hmm. And whatever tow vehicle that you get for the race car, mm-hmm. you could just use that all the time and see if you can get along. If you can't, all right, you've got to go to some cool four-door. All right,
yeah,
cool.
For sure.
That's
for
all
sure.
good. But it sounds like what he's looking for is really just, I've had the Cayman, love it. Mm-hmm. Now, what's the next fun car? But if he wants to keep that car, you know, if you keep cars long enough where you know that, okay, I probably won't be getting rid of this next car, so I kind of need to plan ahead mm-hmm. 2 years in advance, I do get that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But why not just go have another fun experience? You've done the Cayman. You've got the Exige. Let's replace the Cayman with something and go to new. Go get something else. Yeah, Miata RF with the turbo is pretty compelling, I
it's
have
pretty
to
compelling.
Admit.
Yeah, Kurt, there's a lot of things here. There's a lot of kind of parental unpacking I want to do here for a second. I'm not going to go too long, but I want to talk about a few things. One of the big things, I want to align with Paul on this. You said you're 2 years, it sounds like 2 years from being pregnant. Now, that assumes, by the way, look, let's get into reality.
It's going on the calendar. We're getting pregnant here. That, then we're going to get the car
here.
This
is the thing. Some people say we're going to start trying and they're pregnant instantly.
Sure.
You might try for a year.
True.
Okay. So even if you get pregnant exactly when you quote unquote plan to, I've got that in huge air quotes because that never seems like you've planned enough. 2 years from now, if you get pregnant instantly, you're still got, I mean, this is biology, another 9 months after that. So almost 3 years from now, you need this car.
Yeah.
Okay. So I don't know that you need to shop for it instantly, but I take your point, Paul. Maybe it's just the new experience thing. So let's align things. Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. Fine. But again, when my son was born and we first moved to, actually when my son was born, I still had my 300ZX in Los
Did
Angeles.
Did you really?
Yes.
You
and then I sold it when we left.
And the ZX?
Mm-hmm. When I first had him.
But you never took him in the Z,
no,
did you?
No, of course not. But that's the thing. We just took the Acadia. Exactly. We moved here. I got my Saab 9-2X.
Right.
And he rode in the back of that. Right. Okay. But most of the time he rode in family Acadia.
Right.
And then
right.
when he was about, he was about four, we got the 86, the FRS. Okay.
I thought he
now,
was
by
older
that
than
point,
that for some
four
reason.
Five, right around there for sure.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. So, because Amazing. Think about the fact that I've had the Elise 3 years already.
You have?
And he's 10.
Unbelievable.
So, you know, he was right around five and we got it. So the big thing here about the 2+2, you absolutely can do it.
I think the answer is yes.
Here's the problem though.
Just depends on the car, right?
By the time I had my 2+2, I was out of the rear facing car seat.
Mm-hmm.
Rear facing car seats are trash can. Take a garden trash can. And think about how would this go in my car. That's kind of an approximation of what you're having to deal with. Okay?
Oh, it's designed to fit.
Yeah. So, sure. So if you put a rear-facing car seat in a 2+2, what's probably going to happen is that your passenger seat is going to be in its folded-up position most of the time to fit that in the back. Can you do it? Yes, you can. Is it easy? Not really. Now, if it's just you and your child and this is an occasional thing, why not?
That's
There's no reason
thinking.
Not to, yeah. okay? If it's going to be a regular thing and the three of you need to go anywhere, that's going to be hard. But by the time my son was in the back, he was small enough that he fit easily, but he was also big enough that he was out of the rear-facing car seat. And we very quickly, shortly after I got that car, we got out of the car seat in general and got to the booster. We were right on the cusp. So I kind of rushed him into the booster.
Sure.
I also
sure.
want to go on a side rant here and say this. From a parental selfishness standpoint, the automotive establishment, the DMV of your area, they cannot legally require you to have more than a 2-seat car because you are a parent.
Mm.
They can make recommendations, and I'm not saying the recommendations are wrong. When you have a 2-seater, you would like to have an airbag that shuts off on the passenger side because it's the airbag that causes kids problems.
Right, right.
But they cannot tell you, you are a parent now, you must get rid of your Miata, your Cayman, your whatever.
Of course, they can't tell you that.
So all of those cars have latch systems on the passenger side. 2+2 is better. You get them in the back seat. I get it. I totally get that. So I want to encourage you to do this. I also want to say, as far as the am I being selfish, we're all selfish in our own ways, Kurt, but I will say that there's two major thrusts that happen when you become a parent.
Mm.
Okay? Some parents cease to live their own lives. And every decision that they make mm-hmm. is about what is best, and I'm saying best in quotes, best for the child. And so the cars they want to drive, the vacations they want to take, the life they want to live, all of that ceases because now they're parents. I'm not saying that's wrong, but that exists. The counterpoint is, and the way that my wife and I are trying to live, and again, I'm not saying this is better or worse, but we very much went, okay, let's try to integrate our son into our life.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
We're going to give him everything he needs as best we can, but the world isn't his. Hmm. We don't exist for his purpose.
Mm-hmm.
So if it's a little awkward that I have a car that's not ideal for being a parent, I'm fine driving the yellow Lotus Elise school bus. And you know what? Now he's old enough, he loves it.
Sure.
And I know my mother-in-law from day one is like, what are you doing? She's been doing that for 20 years anyway. But she's like, what are you doing? I will never forget when I first got the Lotus and my mother-in-law first saw it. My son, very excitedly, was like, we need to get her in the Lotus. And I said, we absolutely do not. We absolutely do not need to get her in that car. Because I can guarantee you, I can hear the eye roll from the other room. And I don't care. You know, so that's the thing, because she is the type of person, she raised my wife this way, where her world stopped so she could be a mom.
Yeah.
So the fact that my wife and I live that a little differently is a constant source of, let's just say, discussion. Let's just leave it at discussion. So you're not being selfish, okay?
Yeah.
When we did our 50 years of 9/11 film, there was a woman that drove a 997 911. Her name was Diane.
Oh, yes, yes, yes.
Single mom, two kids. I think her daughter at the time was 10.
I was going to say.
And her son was 6 or 7.
Yeah, yeah.
That was her only car. She had a 997 911. That was the school bus. Daughter in the passenger seat, son in the back. She told us many times, I love to garden. I go to Home Depot with my 911. I throw mulch in the frunk. And we looked at her like, you are my new hero.
Well, she also told us that when she needs mommy time, that equivalent for her is jumping in the 911 and taking one particular road near her that she knows it really well, and she can hammer up it.
Yep.
It's not that far, so she can get away for like 15 minutes.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
It's the equivalent of going into the next room and screaming at the top of your lungs or screaming into a pillow.
Exactly her
it's
equivalent.
It's the automotive equivalent
very,
of doing that.
Yeah,
she just needed to get away. She'd jump in her car, go take this road. I mean, hot. Mm-hmm. Well, now she's got the right car to do it, and she'd come back cleansed. She's like, okay, we're good. I'm not angry anymore.
Now, the counterpoint, Kurt, I will say this. The reason that minivans and the Model X exist and are so beloved by parents, there are lots of reasons, but the reason that they do mainly is because once you put a kid in a rear-facing child seat in a car that is a shipping crate where the entire door leaves you, you're going, this is so easy.
Yeah.
Yeah. It will be a struggle, but I think the struggle's worth it. So that's the counterpoint.
Yeah,
in this area,
sure.
I think shop 2+2s. I think the M2 or GT350 would be great for this job. Both of them have legitimately decent sized back seats. The 86 is tight.
In comparison, yeah.
So the M2 or the GT350, you would love that as a daily. It's a good manual transmission, worthwhile, fun car with personality and attitude.
Absolutely.
And then put the child seat in it. Have a great day. I hope that helps, Kurt.
Well, I suggested the 86 only because I know you had done it with your son.
It's very doable. It's very doable.
But it's tight. You
it
even
is.
Admitted,
it's for
like,
sure.
Okay, the kid's growing. It's tight. Mm-hmm. You know, your wife has to slide the seat forward now and
totally.
Everybody's, you know, tight in there. So the M2 is probably the smallest I'd go.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, either car.
When it was my son and I in the 86, I mean the FRS, we never had a problem. It was when the three of us needed to go somewhere. It was like, this is a little small for us now.
Right.
So you could get by with it. But I'm really thinking about that rear-facing child seat and the amount of space that takes up. I think you'd be happier to have something the size of the M2 or the GT350.
So now there's the spectrum of sacrifice depending on what you want to do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, how much are you willing to take? So Kurt, let us know. Hopefully that's helpful. And we're coming back. We're longtime users and big believers in Griot's Garage car care products. That's because while many other brands are just rebranded versions of the same few products, Griot's Garage has developed, manufactured, and bottled bespoke car care products since 1990.
In fact, many of Griot's first customers were collector cars displayed at Pebble Beach. And they're a family company based in Washington State, still dedicated to having the best products for every car and budget. In fact, Paul learned his crazy certified Paul-owned car care style directly from Griot's.
We've used Griot's Garage car care products on our own cars for over 20 years, and we wouldn't use anything else. If you're wondering how to get going, they offer free training and techniques through their videos and their website and starter kits that will help your car look its best.
Griot's Garage products are 100% guaranteed, and all the liquid products are made right here in the USA. They offer 100% lifetime guarantee, so give them a try.
When you're ordering at griotsgarage.com, use the code EVERYDAY for 10% off your order. Enjoy the finest quality car care products you can buy at griotsgarage.com.
If you've got more cars in the garage space, and we suspect you probably do, then you need to protect it with a custom car cover from Covercraft. We recommend the NOAA Custom Car Cover. They're each made to fit your car perfectly, and they resist moisture but also breathe to eliminate condensation. It has four-layer protection for all weather conditions, and it protects your car from UV rays as well. The NOAA covers even have a soft inner layer, are made entirely in the USA, and come with a 4-year warranty.
In the worst winds we've seen, the NOAA cover stays put. Todd had one on the Lancer, and it kept the paint pristine in all conditions. I wore one out after 9 years of daily use on my Audi Avant, and people always asked how I kept it so nice. Plus, you can defend your interior against kids and dogs and spills and any weekend adventure you might have in the mud and snow with custom seat covers from Covercraft.
You can have the nicest car all winter long with help from our friends at Covercraft. And you can get 10% off your custom car cover and any Covercraft product by using the code EVERYDAY right now at Covercraft.com. And it even ships for free. Follow the link from our sponsors page or go directly to Covercraft.com to keep your car looking its best. Derek is writing us with a public service announcement. And that is, don't listen to your coworkers. Now, he's listing it as a blanket statement. We're going to clarify that as he was recommended what he should be driving with his job. He's in construction, and all his coworkers said, you really need a truck.
Uh-huh.
And so he sold a car he loved, which was a manual Mark 7 GTI. Mm-hmm. Loved it, sold it, got himself a pickup, and then quickly thought, what have I done?
Well, the reason he's writing is because his company is going to now provide him with a truck again.
Perfect.
So therefore, he says, I can go back to the realm of fun.
Mm-hmm.
What do I do? He's given us four virtual garage cars that he's looked at, like an Alfa Romeo Giulia TI,
and like
sending order towards more expensive. He says a new GTI Autobahn. He says there's killer deals going on, maybe a Civic Type R, and maybe a Genesis G70 3.3. What would we recommend? Is there something missing? He says he is out in Charlotte, North Carolina. He says it snows once, maybe twice a winter, but he's looking to get fun. You know, so where does he draw the line? Mm-hmm. Where, you know, what is he doing? Because now that you have a truck again, that is truly the commute to work truck. It is, and your colleagues won't notice because now you're in the truck and who cares?
It's the do construction truck. It's everything he needs it to be. It like a truck.
You can run errands.
Yes.
A truck can do it all.
Totally.
But now, where you draw the line and you're asking about bang for the buck, well, that particular phrase does not necessarily have to mean power.
True.
Although
true,
I point the finger at me because I admit I need at least 300 horsepower to be satisfied.
You are picky in that regard.
I need that. And I realize
I don't care what the number is.
All three of my cars right now are 300 plus horsepower.
Okay.
The Expedition's 310, the Cayman's 340, and the Maserati's 400. Power.
Well done. Let me think. The Phaeton is the most powerful car I own.
It's
335 horsepower and 5,200 pounds. That is the most powerful car I own.
That's hilarious.
The Cayenne has just under 300 and the Lotus has 190.
Well, you just touched on it because the new Miata RF has blown my mind.
I know it has. Yeah.
So that means bang for the buck now equates to power to weight.
Yes, it does.
In my mind, they are now and the same.
I'm so glad to have you come a little bit more to the dark side that is where I live. I hear you. Yeah.
I don't want to go quite as small as an Elise. The Cayman, I think, is the perfect car. The size.
And when I get in the Cayman, when you and I go to Canyon Drives and we trade cars and get the Cayman, I'm like, this is huge. It's gorgeous. It's fun.
The Cayman's
huge.
A boat.
Yeah.
Yes, I know. It all depends on your perspective. However, Derek, it's time for you to try new things. So what that means is all those cars you listed are all newer cars. So what is something that has intrigued you in the past but isn't necessarily as expensive as those? Or maybe it's the same price. Mm-hmm. Or maybe you think, well, those just aren't reliable and I couldn't do that. You've got a truck.
Yeah.
You have a truck.
I totally agree.
It's going to run. It's taken care of by the company.
Yep.
So get the opposite. Here's what I mean. I went looking for the least expensive Lotus Evora, and I found it for $36,499 in North Palm Beach, Florida, 43,000 miles, Oyster interior. Admittedly, it looks a little beat up, but it's got the Storm Titanium paint, and it's $36,000 you could get for 36, probably 35 manual transmission.
Wow.
Now, it's not an S, but it is a Toyota engine.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's probably just going to run.
Yeah, probably.
And this is the car that when people find out, not if, but when people find out that's your car, they'll be astounded. How? What? How did this come to be? Who are you? You're suddenly cooler and more interesting, and your personal stock price just went up. And who are you now?
I thought you
just drove this boring pickup truck.
Yeah.
No, you've got this cool offbeat car. Who is buying these first-generation Lotus Evoras?
What year was that one?
2010.
Okay, so it is first-year stuff. Okay, got it. Yeah, keep
found
going.
Another white one for $39,000. Looks infinitely better.
Love it.
Black interior, so it'll hold the wear a little bit better. Mm-hmm. But okay, it's not the S. It's not as powerful, but
yeah.
You're still in a car that people are going to go, what?
Yeah.
How much are we paying you? Or, you know what I mean?
Are we paying you too much? Is the secondary question, but yeah.
Because at first I thought you could go Hyundai Veloster N. That's just usable, fun, but it's too usable.
Mm-hmm.
It's too useful. It's too practical. Go something nutty because you've got the truck that's paid for by your company.
I so agree.
Even Caymans are kind of practical in a way. That's what I love about them because they're a great road trip car, their track, all that stuff. But they've got two front, one trunk, one frunk.
Mm-hmm.
They're kind of practical in a sense.
To a degree, yeah.
Let's go nuts.
I like this. Well done. No, I really like this.
And that's why I had hit a Evora.
I think it's great. I want to touch on some of the stuff you've talked about, and I want to talk about some stuff in the middle. Derek, the big takeaway I have here, and Paul's already touched on it, you don't need a four-door sedan. Now, everything you've listed for us as the things you're looking at is some variant of a four-door with space.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think that is a carryover of the fact that you had a GTI, which ultimately is in a fantastically usable car, fun,
great
amazing
choice.
Amounts of space. It's totally one of the best do-it-alls on the market.
Totally.
But you're being handed a pickup. So it will do all of the pickup stuff plus create the right perception when you go to the job site.
Totally.
So if you need utility, you have it.
Exactly.
So I don't think you even need a four-door. Because the key thing that you mention here is you say, by the way, I'm a 35-year-old bachelor living in Charlotte. No kids, no wife, no dog.
Mm-hmm.
Who are we shopping four doors for?
Let's go nuts.
What are we doing?
Yeah.
So my thought for you, and I know you think the Cayman actually might be too realistic, but I really think here, this is my statement to you, Derek. Go drive a used Cayman and just ponder your life choices.
The world has ended because you just recommended a Cayman and I recommended a Lotus.
I know. But just drive a Cayman and have a real conversation with yourself of, could this work in my life? I'm not saying it's the answer.
Could he buy Kurt's Cayman? Kurt's getting rid of his Cayman.
It's such an interesting... You're still going for pink slips. Bravo.
I am.
But it's such an interesting car that is a very usable two-door dedicated sports car. So drive it and just go, can this work? For the stuff that this won't work for, can't I just take the truck?
Exactly. Yeah.
I don't think another GTI should be in your future. I think you need a new experience. If you really want to go hatchback, this is where the Veloster N goes. It is the more fun, more hair on fire, manual transmission hatchback.
Yeah, yeah.
So Veloster N over GTI.
Yeah.
I really think the Cayman, you should do it as a reference point. I'm not saying the Cayman's the car for you, but I think you need to drive one as a reference point and just go, could two-door, two seats work? Because if it does, then it opens up to the thing you're saying, Paul, the Evora, the Miata, the 86, the whatever. Just find now a car in that realm. I think you're thinking too much of a do-it-all car, which you don't need anymore.
Exactly. Exactly.
I like your 2+2 idea. I mean, I like your four-door idea. I thought a 2+2, as you said, what about a Cadillac ATS-V Coupe? What about a BMW 335 IS?
Delightful.
These are affordable, fun to drive, good two-door, kind of classy-looking cars. But a part of me goes, you don't even need to be that usable.
Yeah, that's where my
headspace is.
So
this is the chance to go nuts.
That's where I went too, because it's all those cars that we look at on Bring a Trailer and we think, man, if I only had a lump of cash, I could I could get that. I could snipe it and come away with this cool car that's been restored or upgraded or refreshed or whatever. And nobody would have that thing and everybody would ask me. That's what I want for you, Derek.
I see it.
You pull up on this and people are like, now, wait, I thought you were a pickup truck guy.
Yeah.
Nope.
Well, but here's the thing. Think about the world that opens up. You can go drive a Corvette.
That's interesting.
Why not? Go drive a Corvette.
For 35 grand, do you know what kind of Corvette you can get? You can probably get a C7 with a Z51 package.
Yeah. You could get a C6 Z06 with 700 horsepower.
Whoa.
That's what I'm saying. I mean, there's lots of opportunity here to get... Look, obviously, I'm the guy that drives the crazy Lotus Elise because practicality is irrelevant to me in that car.
Mm-hmm.
My son loves the fact that it's impractical. My wife likes driving it too. It's crazy. The three of us will never go anywhere together in that car.
Sure. But neither, you wouldn't own it if that were your only car.
Exactly.
Guaranteed.
Right.
Guaranteed.
But this is the thing. You have that flexibility, so embrace it and see what you find.
Thank you for writing, guys. Really appreciate your emails. Please write to you. Write to us.
Write to you if you want.
Write to yourself. No.
Write to yourself a practice email, then send it to us.
Exactly.
Why not? Sure.
That came out wrong. Write to us, everydaydrivertv@gmail.com, or on the website when you're perusing all the stuff that you can come on, you know, the trips you can go on with us and outlets and YouTube and Amazon, all that stuff, top right corner under the About tab is the contact button that actually syndicates your emails to the same email address. So we get both. So we get two kinds of emails and we see them both. Please write to us your stories, your debates, your topic Tuesdays, and your car conclusions. You've been great with that. We need to do a new car conclusions very soon.
Yeah, we do.
And we've got to jump to social media questions. I say jump in. What have you got?
Let's start here with Lucky Jerk on Instagram. He said, which would we choose? Great steering feel with an open diff or poor, barely perceivable steering feel with a limited slip diff? I'm going to go on a side rant here for a second. We, and I'm including myself, we as enthusiasts all have come to this conclusion that if it did not have a limited slip differential, it can't possibly be any good.
Yeah.
Now, I will say as a guy that likes to drive a sports car in the winter, then it becomes vital.
Okay,
but
fair enough.
For driving fun, it does not become vital. I'll give you two reasons, and one of them answers your question, Lucky Jerk. Two cars with no limited slip diff. Early McLaren road cars. Early McLaren road cars and my Lotus Elise.
Yeah.
My Lotus Elise is exactly what you're talking about. Fantastic steering feel, no limited slip differential. You could get them, but mine does not have one. I would go that way all the time. The problem would be couldn't drive it in the snow.
Yeah, that is the issue. All right, over here on Twitter, Achim, yes, our friend Achim, is writing from Germany asking me a design question. Do car manufacturers design the good-looking S-line or M-package first, or do they do the unattractive base model first and then add that package on, or do they do it the other way around? How do they do this? Well, honestly, it's all sketch.
Let's draw it ugly and then make it better.
Here's the ugly version. Here's the ugly trim. Cheap. And then here's the cool, expensive trim that you really want to buy. No. They actually go after the sketch concept first. Okay? So they get the theme in there and they establish the car and then figure out what elements of the car are differentiated through a trim package. Because what is that car? Does it need to have a sport package on it? Does it need to have blacked out trim for, you know, various engine types and, you know, models going in there?
Yeah, yeah.
So ultimately, they designed the cool one first. The designers always design the cool one with the 28-inch wheels and the, you know, tiny slit of a window and proportions are way off in comparison to
the overgrown children version.
Exactly.
The sketches in a math book version.
It's the Hot Wheels version. That's what they all draw first. Yeah. And then we slowly bring it back to reality and then we design, here it is, the ultimate one. But now that we've decided on this is the car, we've got to divvy it up into the trim levels, and that's when you start working with marketing. Okay, what engines are we offering? What is the platform? Where are we going with this? And then, you know, you're stuck with the, all right, you're getting the base trim level. Show us what that looks like.
Back this off. Make it less sexy. J.R. Schultz says that he has always enjoyed driving in the snow, but now he's bought winter tires. And he said, now I love it. So his question is
his
switch.
I love the revelation.
That's fantastic. I'm thrilled that you do.
Cool.
Is the switch, and that actually directly relates to tomorrow's episode on Motor Trend. Mm-hmm. We just have a discussion about, nothing wrong with it, but SUVs with all seasons, which we all buy, use, in this case, rent. It's all that gets rented in Park City in the winter. It's like all rental SUVs on all seasons.
Totally.
And then we have that next to a dedicated sports car on winter tires on a road that, what was hysterical on the road we shot on is the looks we got. Rolling up that road in a Miata RF.
Yeah.
Because everything else on that road was big, huge trucks. And we went
strange.
Anyway, so his question is, I've loved the switch from all seasons to winter tires so much. Would I enjoy the switch from all seasons to summer tires as much? Potentially is my answer. Because it really depends on the kind of driving you do in the summer. If you're just a commute driver, probably not.
Okay.
Because in the winter,
that.
You're driving in a commute. You don't have any traction all of a sudden.
Yeah.
There's snow on the road. Your commute is now easier and better and more fun with better grip because you have winter tires. It doesn't require you to drive differently to get traction benefits out of it. If you're a person that goes to a back road, I think you'll notice differences in turning. You'll notice differences in total grip. How soon do the tires squeal? What's your confidence level? Typically, I also find that a performance tire breaks away better when it's starting to find the edges of itself. I don't advise finding them, but if you find the edges, typically they break away with much more control than an all season. But if you don't drive that way, the jump from all seasons to summers, you're going to be like, these were expensive.
Although, don't you think that getting those summer tires will now encourage that kind of driving? You might discover that, which means
I would hope so.
You'll have another revelation just like had.
But if you're just driving straight roads commute, I don't know that you'd notice. But man, all the kind of driving we do, I notice like crazy.
All right. Question from Shane M. asks, what type of driving experience do we want to do next that we haven't done yet? And can we set up another meetup around that?
Shane came to the Porsche experience and he went, what do you guys want to do next? Essentially, that's funny.
I mean, I want to go 200 miles an hour. Mm-hmm. Let's all go 200 in something. Let's do the Texas mile and let's all do 200 miles an hour.
You did 176 in that Cayenne GTS when we did pilgrimage with three others of us in gear in it. And it was a very quiet car with a lot of focus.
I know it was.
I did 167. You did 175 or 77 or something like
something
that.
Something like
fast.
That was very fast. That was in a big SUV.
In
How about a sports
SUV,
car,
yeah.
A real car with a lot of power in a controlled environment. I don't really want to go do it on the Autobahn. You can really, people do and they make videos about it, but that's way up there. That's not common.
I do. I wouldn't mind seeing that 320 kilometers an hour tick by on the Autobahn. That'd be pretty cool.
There's a lot of adrenaline.
That'd be pretty cool.
I agree, but I want to go 200.
Mm-hmm. I see it. That's
let's
great.
Let's do 200
that's
in
really
something.
Good. That's very fun.
And
I'm
we all
that
check
there.
That box. We all come away and be like, yep, got it.
Now officially done 200.
Exactly.
Anthony asked a question on Facebook that I am in love with.
Okay.
And Derek responded, and his response was exactly what I thought, too.
Oh,
Anthony says, okay, have we ever considered making vinyl stickers that align with some of our shirts?
Mm-hmm.
Which, in general, I would say no. But then you latched onto this. What about an everyday driver, Spectrum of Sacrifice, vinyl, that you could put on the back of the car for your hauling car, whatever?
Yeah.
And then Derek asked exactly what struck me. You know the family stickers in the corner? By the way, these are rampant in Utah. Utah is the home of big families.
Yeah.
I did this once. I took my son to the local aquarium. He's 10. He was like 8 or 9 at the time, wanted to go to the local aquarium. We pulled up in my brilliant bright orange FRS, the two of us. We parked next to a 15-passenger van, also a family at the aquarium.
Unbelievable.
And they had the 15 people, mom, dad, and the slowly, you know, Russian doll-style escalation of kids put on the back. And I was like, you've got to be kidding. But good for them. So what if you have a sticker like that, that is the bar graph? And so it's the bar graph and says everyday driver, Spectrum of Sacrifice. And it's a bar graph, like a line. And you can put a dot on the bar graph where that car qualifies.
Mm.
So you've got an SUV one and it's way to one side. You've got a sports car and it's way to the other side. That makes me laugh. And Mandy, hey, can we do that? That'd be fun.
Nice. All right. Amir Leroya on Facebook says it's been about 13 years. Don't do that. Since we've started the YouTube channel, what is the biggest difference we are proud of in its progress from a production standpoint? YouTube has morphed and changed. They've changed their algorithm. They've
multiple
added
times.
The bell notifications. They've added features that were not around when we started, actually.
They're probably changing something as we talk right
probably.
Now.
Probably. Yes. I mean, we continually joke that when we were on YouTube, the show predates GoPros, DSLRs, and YouTube WizCat videos and family vacation photos.
It was. Absolutely it was, yeah.
So the difference, what I wouldn't change is the quality you and I do. It was just the gear that we used to do it with. We were using Sony SD Handycams to get the job done, and that was the best we could do at the time.
Yep.
But the mindset was still there, and I know there's a lot of videos out there. Some get way more than they deserve. Others don't. Mm-hmm. Others get very, very well-deserved kinds of views.
Mm-hmm.
But what you and I have wanted is quality at all times, and we've continued that. The difference is where we've shifted our focus is continuing to build the YouTube channel and continuing to push, hey, these are single-car reviews, and they're used as a shopping tool by many people in a lot of cases.
Yeah.
And when we drive a car and we've driven it for YouTube and produced a video, now we're over here on the podcast saying, all right, now we know we've driven those three flavors of SUV and all right, which one applies to the person's debate? That makes it, you know, a lot more helpful in driving that kind of stuff. But then for the enthusiast, where the enthusiast part that always was there from the very beginning, that is now very much directed at the TV comparison episodes.
Yeah.
And so from a, you know, change this, change that, it's almost like YouTube has changed and they've kind of had to over the years.
For sure.
But our you know, desire for quality has not. So I don't know that I would change much knowing what, you know, we couldn't do anything about it anyway.
Well, there's a progression that's gone on over the entire course of the show, and I'm very glad of the fact that we have progressed. You and I were talking this week for a different reason. We were talking about the fact that we have kind of naturally diversified with TV show, podcast, feature films, the stuff that's streaming, the YouTube stuff, all of the above. It's all different categories, slightly different headspaces. I like that we're able to be diversified and people can find us in different places. I didn't ever expect that when we started, which I'm very glad about that.
Right.
I'm also personally trying really hard to balance, and this is a tough balance for me. There's always things on the show I want to improve. Production quality wise, editorially, scale. I always want to improve things, but then I have to temper that with stuff has to get done.
Mm-hmm.
So I hope we are always improving. I hope we're always finding. We do this privately 2-3 times a year. We just kind of sit down and go, what's working? Where do we want to improve?
For sure.
What are we going to push harder on? What gear might we need to chase? I always hope we're improving the tech of it and improving the quality of it, because that is something that's I'm kind of obsessed with, and I have to back myself off and go, no, that's going to go out. In spite of the fact I could fix 15 more things, it's going out, off it goes. And that could be YouTube, TV, whatever. But one of the things I'm most proud of, honestly, is 5 feature films.
Yeah.
And that three of those are those retrospectives of a car make, and nobody else has done it.
Yeah.
That really surprises me. It shocked me when it happened with 50 years of 9/11. I'm surprised that nobody else has really tackled that. But I think the flip side of it is it's difficult. And I'm glad and proud that we've done it.
You know, I think I'll add to that and say what I'm really proud of is our ability to come up with ideas that are really out there. Mm-hmm. Like, what if we did these 2 car comparisons at this location with these resources? And we think, okay, that's just not possible. We can't afford that.
What's funny is the beyond
then we back it off.
Yeah, beyond the can't afford it, you're right, is when we talk to manufacturers, you guys would laugh if you know how many times you talk to manufacturers about one of our ideas and we say it and there's this silence.
Exactly.
And then they go,
I don't know.
Well, because it's so far beyond anything they thought anybody was going to come up for their car. They're but the flip side of that is, like, when we went to Chevy for the ZR1 for the end of our Corvette film.
Yeah.
You know, they were getting all kinds of requests for the ZR1. And we dropped with, by the way, we're doing this Corvette film, need a ZR1. They were like, oh, didn't see that coming.
Exactly.
Let's figure that out on the calendar. So it's very interesting.
Yeah, the car comparisons you and I have thought of. So hopefully we're going to manifest that in some more TV quality YouTube episodes coming out this year that are...
Hopefully.
We've got some very big ideas.
We've got nothing else to do.
And again, yeah, right. So we'll see. All right, what else you got?
Doug said he hit a deer for the first time yesterday. I'm sorry, man. Mm. He thinks he's not sure if his vehicle's totaled. It's getting an estimate right now. So he's asking hit a deer questions. What's our hit a deer experience? We actually have, we jokingly call it the moose test, which you've heard of, on this Miata episode happening tomorrow. Lots of stuff that relates to that episode. I'm very excited. So he's asking about any stories about it. I will tell you one that happened recently to me. Mm. I was driving really, really early in the morning in the Phaeton through Park City. Okay. Early enough that there's no traffic. There's nothing going on yet.
Oh, yeah.
And
yeah.
I had left early in the morning, and I had to scrape ice off the windshield of the car. And there was still some lingering in the far right corner of the windshield.
Yeah.
It was slowly melting off, right? I'm going through a populated portion of Park City. In fact, I'm going by the local high school.
Yeah.
So I'm not zooming. I'm going by the local high school. And all of a sudden, a small male buck steps right out in the road. And because of the lack of visibility, less than perfect, on the far right corner, I saw him really late.
Ooh.
And I saw him because my right headlight lit up his shoulder while he looked at me.
Ooh.
And it was weird. Yikes. And perfect, because when I first saw him appear in the headlight, I turned left and I watched his head turn. He turned right away from me. It must have been inches. I missed him.
Oh my!
Must have been inches, but it was weird because I mean my side windows were clear and I'm looking ahead and I've got the lights on, you know, brights and everything. He just stepped out of nowhere, out of blackness from the high school parking lot. It was the weirdest thing. So that's my closest call I've had. I've had other times. You'll see a lot of times here. Paul lives off a pretty dark road. I do as well. You're driving down that road and the deer are just on the side of the road.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Another one I saw this year that made me laugh. I was going through Park City near Main Street. Right around the time all the bars were closing, delivering something, going out there. Anyway, so I'm out there. I'm driving along. This is the time of night when a lot of people are walking on the sidewalks because the bars are closing. They're walking on the sidewalks. Instead of driving, they're walking home to their condos or whatever.
Yeah.
I'm driving along, and I notice something out of the corner of my eye on my left side of the street. Going down the sidewalk on the left side of the street are 2 deer, nose to tail,
oh my gosh,
walking perfectly down the sidewalk. I'm like, why are the deer doing the walk of shame? What's going on? Perfectly down the sidewalk. It was awesome. I was like, well, good for you.
There was one actually caught on drone in the Generations. Well, it wasn't Generations. It was the comparison with the Toyota Supra against the BMW M2 competition.
Yeah.
And the Cayman. And you can see it from the overhead drone shot. I was driving, and I forget which car I was in, but I was moving. And it was 2 bison by the side of the road because the sun was at that, you know, high noon angle coming right in. And so the windshield, you know, had the
glare
on it.
For sure.
And I thought it was just a giant boulder. And I went by really fast and realized, no, that was two bison just hanging out inches off the white line. And otherwise, if I had known that, I would have, of course, slowed down and steered around them and all that stuff. But we were on a road where it's open range. Mm-hmm. So that means cattle, horses, sheep, bison.
Yeah.
They just cruise across the road because it's open range.
That reminds me of one of the many close calls of American Original, our Corvette film.
Yeah.
There were multiple, but this is the one that I don't think has been discussed a lot.
Fortunately, the car's broke and we didn't hit anything.
The Z06, well, I almost did in the 80s
that's
one
when
we had.
Close call
that was close with deer, yeah, for sure. But no, but there was this one with Edgar. You remember this? We were shooting the Z06 piece that also became a TV piece.
I was still coming back behind.
Edgar, one of our shooters, he hops in the white Z06, brand new C7 Z06. He hops in that. I'm in the C7 Z06 with the 7-liter. I'm sorry, the C6 Z06 with the 7-liter.
Yeah.
And I think Chance was in the C5.
Okay.
And we're triples. We're running down the road, okay? And I'm at the back, but I can see Edgar's out front in the white one. And this was fall. If you've seen our Z06s for Everyone TV piece, this is when that was shot. It was fall. So everything is brilliant colors. White aspen trunks and orange leaves and green grass, and everything's really, really bright.
Mm-hmm.
Edgar's going along quickly, but not crazy by any means.
Yeah.
Out of the side of the road, out of the aspen, stepped a black as night mama moose.
No. Oh.
Mm. And because, again, she's the only black thing. She's like a black hole. She's the only black thing around. How she hid in the aspen prior, I have no idea.
They do
and
that
she just
so well.
Stepped perfectly. And it wasn't like she eased her way in. She was off the road, and now she was in front of Edgar.
Bummer.
Mama Moose.
Oh.
And I see his lights. I see her step out. I see his tail lights fly. He buries it. Gets stopped. We all kind of take a breath. And right as she's about to clear the road, baby.
Ugh.
Baby Moose comes up. So Edgar stops again. We just kind of waited. She cleared. We went, and we talked about it later. We're like, how does something that big and black hide in the middle of like a kaleidoscope of color? She just stepped out,
and
there she was, and then she left.
Oh, my gosh. All right, a couple more questions here. First of all, from Josh Schmidt, who asks a great question. Do we think we're going to see the modern American muscle cars like the Mustang, Camaro, and Challenger adapt all-wheel drive for the high-performance variants? Mm. And Josh is saying they focus so much on a straight-line performance, and one of the best aids to quarter-mile time and 0 to 60 is all-wheel drive. You're right. That's how cars put the power down. That's the Nissan GTR trick.
Yep.
We definitely agree. But he says, imagine a Hellcat or a GT500 with all-wheel drive.
Mm-hmm.
But on the other hand, they pride themselves on being usable GT cars, and all-wheel drive would allow people in snowy climates, you know, winter where there's weather, more security. So, do we think all-wheel drive might come from the use of electric motors, like a hybrid kind of a thing, to put power down to the front wheels? Maybe this could minimize packaging rather than having a drive shaft, or, you know, making it overly complex like a Ferrari FF where the drive shaft goes through the center of the oil pan and, you know, it's actually a two-stage gear system.
Sounds like
system
a Ferrari fix. Yeah.
You know, it's too complicated. That could be. But what we've also seen, Josh, with modern American muscle cars, they now actually kind of handle well.
Mm.
And all-wheel drive would add weight, and it would take away a lot of the feel that modern American muscle has been now discovering, in my opinion.
Mm.
We've been finding that. We get out of the Mustang or whatever and think, well, that was better than I thought.
Yeah.
You know, especially the GT350.
Great stuff.
Well, that was great. Awesome. I didn't see that coming. I thought that was just, you know, powerful straight line kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah.
So on one hand, I do see your point about maybe that opens it up for more people. But on the other hand, if you need all-wheel drive for snowy climates, why not just, you know, get something? We've proven that it comes down to the same episode. You can do rear-wheel drive. You can.
Yeah.
I'm back and forth.
Okay.
I'm very mixed on this because I don't want the extra weight and complexity in a high horsepower car like that. I just want rear wheel drive. And I love the beauty of engine in the front, throwing power to the back. I do love that.
Mm-hmm.
And they kind of do handle despite their weight and size. It's pretty good actually.
Yeah.
So I don't like that kind of thing. But from a Nissan GTR kind of thinking, that could be astounding.
It could be
incredible. But we don't love the GTR for its handling. That's
where
it falls down.
That's a fair point. The all-wheel drive demon.
Yeah. Oh,
With more tire shredding, all four tires.
I'm back and forth. I don't have a straight answer on that.
Okay.
And then finally, there's been a question over here from Ben Sherman, who continually asks us, Ben, thoughts on the Cadillac CTS V Sport trim, not the V, CTS V, but mm-hmm. the V Sport trim, which mm-hmm. is really on the website, just kind of the Sport trim. And mm-hmm. we don't talk about that much simply because, you know, we're different trim packages are what they are, but I do like the Sport package for the blacking out of things, and it kind of makes it a little bit meaner. The wheels get more aggressive. The car either is lower or appears lower because of the body kit to mm-hmm. the ground. We do like that Sport package because it takes the plushy, bouncy, you know, super luxury thing out of it. It tightens things up. It makes it, you know, it AMGifies.
There you go.
Kind of thing. And that's what AMG and M Sport, they're all doing the same thing. So why not the Cadillac?
While you're on AMG, I'll talk about Alan's question real quick. He says, Alvin asks, in terms of two-door sports cars, we talk Miatas and S2000s, and occasionally we talk about BMW Zs. Why don't we bring up the Mercedes SLK? AMG or otherwise.
Okay, fair.
The answer, Alvin, is genuinely because I feel like if you're going to go small, you want really agile with great feel. That was not where the SLKs were ever really a standout.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. They're good cruisers. They're nice light cars. They've got, you know, the air scarf to keep you warm in all conditions.
The air scarf.
They've got really good, you know, nice interiors. It's a great place to be, and they feel like a small roadster, but they feel like a small roadster that is more cruiser, even in the AMG flavors, than something like a Miata or an S2000, which has got a lot more focus and agility to it and feel.
Mm-hmm.
The Mercedes mm-hmm. is playing to their market, which isn't necessarily, I'm going to go track this.
It's almost like, let's make a miniaturized SL yeah. with that same kind of feel, rather than a hardcore sports car.
Yeah, so that's the reason it doesn't come up a lot, because if you're chasing a small rear-wheel drive sports car, that feel isn't enough of what the SLK does.
Mm-hmm. Fantastic questions as always, guys. Thanks. Really appreciate all your great questions, your great debates. Please send those in. And as always, we're looking forward to next time. Cheers, everyone.